And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about going to Huntsville, over to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa, to Gadsden, big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. And by the way, really excited about the fact day two in Chattanooga live on WGOW 1150 AM. We're glad to be with you. All y'all in East Tennessee, Northwest Georgia, and that corner of Northeast Alabama that we couldn't quite get because of Sand Mountain and the others. We're glad to be with you. So thank you very much for joining the Right Side Ruffian audience. Somebody who's an OG ruffian, been with us since back in the day. Steve from Tennessee is on line one. Hey man, how are you?
I'm doing good, Phil. I hadn't talked to you in forever. I hate to bother you with calls, but love your show and enjoy texting. But going to share something funny. In 1984, I was a brand new first lieutenant junior grade in the Navy with the Seabees. And we were there doing construction projects, and my command master chief was there. And he was a very combat-ready looking, tall, lanky, I mean, really military squared away totally guy. We were going around in our khakis doing project P&E, looking at planning, estimation, all that. And it was getting about noontime, and he said, "Lieutenant, let's just drop in here and eat at this chow hall." He said, "We got more to do." And he said, "We can get here quick, get out of the way." We walked in there, and as soon as we stepped in the door, somebody hollered, "Hey, hi!" The whole place jumped up. I mean, everybody. I looked at him with that "what in the world" look. He looked at me just sternly, didn't say a word. We walked in one side right out the other. We got out the other side. I said, "What in the world just happened?" He said, "Lieutenant, they saw those two stars above my master chief's anchor and thought I was a two-star and you were my aide. We're not going to disappoint them." He said, "Let's go eat at Burger King."
Nice.
That's what we did. That was hilarious.
You know what, though? Take it and run, brother.
I totally agree with you that jacking with the names of these bases, I never gave it one thought who Benning was. Yeah. And I honor Colonel Moore or General Moore or whatever. I mean, he's awesome. I've read the books. I know the stories. And if they left it Moore, okay, you know, that's fine too. But to mess with those names for that purpose is just sickening.
Yeah, it really was. Thanks, man. Hey, appreciate your fighting CB service. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Bye.
Wow. Good call. Good call. That, by the way, that reminds me, JP, you'll appreciate this. So, for those of y'all that don't know, JP sitting in the studio right now is my nephew. So your granddaddy, my dad. Great story. So when he was a second lieutenant, he told me, I've forgotten when he told me, I'd forgotten about it till Steve from Tennessee just told me that story. He was in Korea in like 1962-ish, you know, and he said he was sitting in the mess tent drinking a cup of coffee trying to fill out his daily reports. And he said he's the only one in the whole mess tent. He's just taking advantage of the fact there was a table, and he's sitting there. And all of a sudden, a general walks in, and he's the only one in the room or the tent. So he has to kind of spring to his feet. "At ease, Lieutenant, carry on." Well, the general takes off his helmet, which has the star on it, and puts it on the rack, and walks over to get something to eat or a cup of coffee or whatever. And so my dad's words to me were, when a general walks in and you're the only person there and you're a second lieutenant, you find a reason to leave.
Yeah.
He said, so I walked swiftly over to the rack, grabbed my helmet, and walked out to my Jeep where my driver was waiting. And he said, my driver came to attention real quick and then looked at me and said, "Sir, you need to go back right now." He was wearing the general's helmet with the stars on it.
That is funny.
He said he turned around. So he turned around and walked back, and yes, the general was waiting for him when he got there. "Well, Lieutenant, I see you've been promoted."
That's hilarious.
All right, hey, listen, we're going to dive right on in here. So you guys feel free to text in or call in your thoughts, your feelings about the things we're going to cover. But military-minded is dipper number one. But I can't just dive right into the military issues. I have to dive into why the military is so necessary and vital to our national interests, and where are we right now on the world stage after 4 years of the Biden administration? Now, let me just paint a broad brush picture here. I pulled an article as a part of today's resources. The very first one I'll lead off with comes from Foreign Policy Magazine. When Foreign Policy Magazine writes, you would think that they're going to, you know, have some, like, strong underlying basis for being able to write the things they do. Because after all, it's Foreign Policy Magazine. Heck of a thing when the day after Biden makes his big foreign policy speech at the State Department last night, trying to make the victory lap on the way out the door, which wound up being one of the lamest things I've ever seen, the Foreign Policy Magazine comes out with an article titled, Biden Meant Well. If that doesn't tell you something, I don't know what does.
I mean, that could be the saying of the whole Biden presidency. Biden meant well.
I think there'll be times, though, we'll find out he didn't really mean well at all.
Yeah, there's that too.
Biden's ate up like a soup sandwich. How about that? That's what my instructor used to always say at airborne school. You are ate up like a soup sandwich. Get out of my AO. And that's we had to move out smartly. So, yeah, Foreign Policy Magazine. Biden meant well, Dateline last night. In a series of farewell addresses during his final week in office, U.S. President Joe Biden is making the case that he's left the United States much stronger than he found it. I saw your face. I saw your face over there. You're not playing poker today, apparently.
Yeah.
During his 4 years, the country has far outpaced Europe, he says. Left Russia, though, engulfed in a quagmire. Mm. Outperformed China economically? Surely. Hung on to global leadership. Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, so in a speech at the State Department on Monday, Biden, I mean, this is literally the way the speech went. In that usual kind of, I'm struggling to get through this kind of way, he says, during my presidency, I have increased America's power in every dimension. Okay, listen. The dimensions of power projection. Let's just do a quick recap here. You ready? The dimensions of power projection on the geopolitical stage come through an acronym called DIME, D-I-M-E. How many times have I said this on the show? But I'll have to do it again to give me some basis for where I'm going. So if DIME is the acronym, what does DIME stand for? It's diplomacy, information or intelligence, depending on who you talk to, military and economic. So the ability to project power by any administration is found in those things: diplomacy, intelligence, military, economics. Are we better on diplomacy? Well, let's see. There's China. There's the Middle East. The Abraham Accords fell apart. There's what else we got? We got tentative relationships now with European allies. France is still mad at us. Canada thinks we're silly. What else we got?
Russia wants southern
border. Yeah, Russia is just mad in general. Russia's not scared of us, but they're also pissed off at us. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's diplomacy. Oh, God. Okay, what about intelligence or information? I don't know. Let's see. Did we know that China was flying balloons over our territory? Doubtful. Did we see it coming when the Houthis and all began launching missiles at our ships? How about what's going on? I mean, listen, I could go on and on and on. Okay, how about military? Well, let's see. We had 40-year recruiting lows. We, for the first time ever, had the Heritage Foundation rank the U.S. military as unprepared. We had any number of readiness issues, and we've been sending out a lot of our stockpiles to Ukraine. Well, crap, what's left? Economics. Do I have to go there? Have you seen the cost of bacon? 40-year inflation.
I think that may be the funniest one of him saying that the economy's great.
So the speech kind of went that way, right? You can look back to 2021 when he hadn't been in office but, you know, a matter of months, and he decided to rip the Band-Aid off in Afghanistan. Now listen, as a veteran of Afghanistan myself, I have said many times I wanted the war to end. I was ready for it to end. 20 years is a long time. But we were no longer in the same level of combat operations that we had been earlier on. And we also had a milestone-based withdrawal plan in place with Trump as opposed to a date on the calendar. Keep in mind, when you project milestones, that means certain things have to be accomplished before you will agree to leave. When you pin a date on the calendar, all the bad guys have to do is wait till that date is passed. And that's what the Taliban did. But what it did was immediately destabilize the world's confidence in the ability of the United States to be that bulwark against tyranny, that firewall against overreach by malign actors worldwide. But Biden says, article from the Daily Wire, Dateline last night, I built the most competent foreign policy team in U.S. history. He is smoking something heavy. I don't know. Maybe it was his stuff they found in that little locker down there at the White House. But for him to say this, while we've been dealing with things like you know, we're still facing cyber attacks from communist China that they haven't punished China for. I mean, this is the stage on which the U.S. military comes into play. Because the SecDef and the SecState have to be able to cohabit the same arenas, right? Now, the military doesn't go there if state can get it done through diplomacy. But diplomacy only happens effectively if you have the clout of a strong military to back it. In other words, we want these things. Well, we can't do those things. Well, we have sanctions. That's the economics. We have the ability to establish trade relations. We have the ability to end trade relations. We have the ability to make your life very difficult financially, or we'll be glad to help you if you'll work with us. That's the economics. In the meantime, you got diplomacy. Well, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. Let's talk like that. We'll work on these things. You want to be supported at the UN, we'll support you on that, but you got to support us over here, you know, with the trade agreements or whatever. Diplomacy. Intelligence. We have certain allies we swap intelligence with. We have some folks in the world stage we won't trade a thing with. But we spy on them, and we know they try to spy on us. Do we do it effectively? And at the same time, you got the military. And that's where we're focusing today. Because the full opportunity to project power on the world stage comes with all aspects of dime being included. Period. And if the military is out, then guess what? You don't have dime, you have die. I just made that up. That was really good. But it's true. If you don't have the ability to project force, then the people who you're trying to negotiate with see no reason to have to worry about it. It's just the way the world works. It's reality. To say otherwise is to be foolish, to be feckless. But that's where we've been for the last 4 years. Now listen, I'll tell you, Jake Sullivan has been the National Security Advisor. I'm not sure how much he got paid. But over the weekend, Jake Sullivan, according to townhall.com, gave an interview in which he said, "I think the American people are safer and the country is better off than we were 4 years ago." Well, Jake, I'm glad you feel that way. But I think that the people in New Orleans who just watched 14 die and 35 wounded by someone who was inspired by ISIS would probably say otherwise. We can look at Middle East chaos. You can look at Ukraine dragging along. We can look at, you know, everybody and their mother knowing that Joe Biden can't find his way on or off the stage sometimes without help. Iranian proxies have been doing all kinds of stuff that caused Israel to have to go out and go full force. But no, I would dare say that the power projection on the world stage has not been what it could be, should be, or ought to be in the last 4 years. When we get back from this break, though, I'm gonna start with dissecting some commentary by General Jack Keane, who says some of the same things that I'm saying here, talking about the world stage and why we should look at the Biden administration as a failed administration when it comes to foreign policy. And then we're going to dive into Pete Hegseth and what's happening up today and where's our U.S. military going with him as a secretary. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're back on dipper number one. I'm calling it military-minded, but I had to lay the foundation for it by talking about Biden's foreign policy or the lack thereof. In fact, I would have to say that there was not truly a Biden doctrine. Does anybody know what it was? I don't.
The Biden staffer doctrine, maybe?
Maybe. I mean, the Biden doctrine is usually some, I mean, I've actually done a whole monologue or something on this in the past where usually you can look at an administration that will either declare the doctrine or you can see the doctrine. But in Biden's case, I don't know what that would be. I don't recall ever seeing a foreign policy doctrine declared. I don't recall seeing anything that said, and this will be the overarching principle. For instance, the Trump doctrine is going to wind up being America first. So the interests of the United States, which shouldn't have to be said, but the interests of the United States are going to be the overarching factor in the decisions made to guide the Trump administration's foreign policy. Mexico wants trade relations. What's America getting out of it? Canada wants better trade relations. What's America getting out of it? Russia wants us to back off Ukraine. What's America getting out of it? The Middle East, Iran wants us to quit trying to help Israel. Not going to happen because America's interests are vested in Israel. Just, you know, on and on and on. America first. You can look and you can find the Reagan doctrine. You can find the Bush doctrine. You can find the Monroe doctrine. You can find all of it. You were about to say that word.
The Monroe doctrine. Yeah.
So General Jack Keane, and we may not have time. We're not going to have time for the whole thing. We're going to, like, this is one of those segments, JP, where I want to play it, stop it, play it, stop it. But and it starts at the 110 mark. Do you got that on Dipper 1? Okay, so this is General Jack Keane talking about the Biden military and foreign policy legacy. He was on Martha McCallum on Fox News. General Keane is probably one of my favorite military commentators. His credibility is unparalleled. Let's go ahead and just start it, and then I'll tell you when to stop. Go ahead.
It was just absolutely stunning. It's amazing to me how some politicians and national leaders can absolutely take the facts and just turn them all around and present something that's completely different. I mean, when it comes to foreign policy and national security, I mean, I don't say this lightly. The president has a failed presidency, and that's the reality of it. When the facts speak for themselves, let's start with what you started with, Russia. President Trump provided lethal aid to help the Ukrainians when he was in his presidency, and he told Putin that there would be severe consequences, he told him personally, if he invaded Ukraine, and he never budged to do it. That first clip you showed was February of 21. In March of 21, 60 days into the Biden presidency, Putin put 70,000 troops on the border of Ukraine. The president is asked the question, what are you going to do about it? His answer is, I'm not going to do anything because I don't want to provoke him. Second question, what if he does go into Ukraine? What will you do then? It depends on how much territory he takes. Putin was testing Biden. Is he the same as he knew when he was part of the Obama administration? Is he different than Trump, who I've been dealing with for 4 years? Putin got his answer. It on Biden's back that Putin takes the initiative and goes into Ukraine. And the catalyst of the failure in Afghanistan certainly underscored the rationale that he was going to do it.
All right, stop right there. I'm going to stop right there and I'll say this. The springboard for foreign policy failure around the world became the debacle of a pullout in Afghanistan. And again, I wanted the war to end, and I'm a veteran of Afghanistan. I wanted the war to end, but you know what? You don't end it like that. Because how you leave is sometimes just as important as how you arrived. And the manner in which the chaotic, ill-conceived, deadly debacle of a pullout in Afghanistan launched itself into the worldview is the gateway for the problems that we're seeing right now. Suddenly, Iran was emboldened. Suddenly, Russia was emboldened. Suddenly, the Abraham Accords began to falter. Suddenly, we had all these things happening, and they all came on the heels of one of the worst foreign policy and military disasters in modern history, and that was the manner in which the Biden administration fecklessly threw aside 20 years of blood and treasure. Was everything in Afghanistan perfect? No. Was it time to leave? Very likely. Leave like that? My God, no. We'll talk about more of this when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama and Tennessee's news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, listen, this audience that we've got, you guys are amazing. And I know, by the way, because I know the areas in which we're on the air, I know what a military-minded community we have. That was the whole focus of this. I mean, I could just as easily just talk about it in glossy, one over the world kind of view. But y'all need to know that what's happening right now in D.C. has a massive impact on places like Redstone Arsenal, or like Anniston Army Depot, or like Fort Benning, Fort Moore, Georgia, all within our listening range. You folks right now that are in Northwest Georgia know for a fact that the military installations in their state drive parts of the economy in their state, the same as they do in Alabama, the same as they do in Tennessee. I mean, Fort Campbell is on the border of Tennessee and Kentucky. Massive installation. And that doesn't even take into account the number of Reserve and National Guard training centers that are located in all these states. Everything that we're talking about right now is about to be impacted by the hearing that's happening today. And all of it trickles down, if you will, from a Trump doctrine that says America first, and replacing sort of a feckless social experimentation, the military is that thing I got to take care of because it's just, you know, part of being commander in chief, to a priority on being warfighters and having honor and integrity and a warrior ethos. And I tell you, today, Pete Hegseth gave his opening statements. In a little while, we'll play parts of the hearings. I will say this. Thank you, JP, for helping me with this. But on my social media right now, at Sen Phil Williams on X, at S-E-N Phil Williams, if you are on Twitter, X, follow me there, or writes, media is on there. We posted a long string with some of the best excerpts from the hearing thus far. It's still going on. But the reality is there were some soundbite moments, y'all, let me just tell you. But one of the best, in my opinion, were the opening statements of Pete Hegseth himself. I mean, to the point that it fired me up. Okay, where do I reenlist? How do I go? But, I mean, he talked about exactly what I said a moment ago, about reinstilling the pride and the vigor of the U.S. military, about putting us back into a position where it's about being warfighters and having that warrior ethos and caring about the soldiers' needs and not the social experimentation and the agenda and the DEI and all of it, that climate change won't be the driving force in what we do. But go back again to the questions we have about where the world is right now and why it's so important. And when before the break, we were talking, we were actually kind of commenting on comments that were made by General Jack Keane as he was interviewed by Martha McCallum. You got that queued up still again? All right, let's do this. A moment ago, he pointed out, General Keane did, that the debacle in Afghanistan was the catalyst for so much of what we're having to see and deal with now on the world stage. Pick it up from there.
The Middle East. In the Middle East, when Biden comes into power, Iran is reeling from the death of Qasem Soleimani and maximum sanctions that have been posed on him, and the progress being made of the Abraham Accords. For the first time, we're starting to stitch together an Arab NATO that we've been talking about for years. What does Biden do? Stops the sanctions and tells the Iranians, I'm making this concession to you as a sign of good faith so we can get back into the nuclear deal. The Iranians read that as weakness. They stiff them on the nuclear deal. They take the money, and what do? They start to fuel ammunition and everything into their proxies. And what happened as a result of all of that? Iran operationalizes their proxies, and they go after Israel with a vengeance once and for all to destroy the state of Israel and drive the United States out of region. So here we have Biden in power, no war in Europe during the Trump administration, no war in the Middle East other than Trump taking down ISIS. And we have war in Europe with Putin threatening to expand it, war in the Middle East. And fortunately, the commander-in-chief is what I call him, Prime Minister Netanyahu, exercised and went after Hamas and Hezbollah and the Iranians in a way that no one else had ever done in 44 years. And he ignored Biden in doing it. Even in the Indo-Pacific theater, that military out there is outpacing the United States considerably. We have lost our ability to deter them militarily, and all sorts of war games and studies have proven that in a congressional commission I was on. What did we do? As opposed to building up the hard power so that diplomacy would be more effective, we issued flat budgets. There has been no defense increase in the Biden administration in 4 years, and we are way behind them. Does she know that? Yes. Is he more aggressive as a result of it? Yes. This is Biden's legacy, what I just described.
Stop it there. Wow, what an amazing set of comments. What an amazing. So, by the way, General Jack Keane, he's the founder and the CEO of the Institute for Modern War, and they have some of the best open source intel that you can find just going online to read updates on, you know, major world events and things and where they are, especially like the war in Ukraine, all of it. Very solid. and his commentary is always very solid. And you don't always have to agree with everything he says, but you cannot deny his bona fides as he gets out there and lays it out. But I think everything he just said is true. In fact, what's really interesting was when he labels, think about this, when he labels Netanyahu as the commander-in-chief, because he says that Netanyahu went after the attackers, Hamas, all the proxies of Iran, Hamas, the Houthis. He did. He actually attacked the Houthis over all the way over, you know, on the far side. He attacks the Houthis. He's leveling Gaza right now. He's attacking Hezbollah in Syria. And Syria, now the Assad regime has fallen. And you look at all this, think Netanyahu did that over the top of the Biden's protestations. What kind of foreign policy have we had? All right. Now, let's fast forward. Here we are today. Biden is taking a victory lap for what God knows. I don't understand. I don't know if Biden really believes a thing he says or if he's just saying it hoping somebody else will believe it. Either way, it's jacked up. But the truth is, we have been in a difficult spot on the world stage. Every bad actor in the world feels like they can get a piece of us right now. The southern border is porous, and they know they can come across if they want to. Why? Because nobody's going to do anything. And that southern border is reminiscent of the other foreign policy failures that we have elsewhere. I look at every time Antony Blinken speaks, I just almost want to just say, would you please somebody poke him and make him talk like a man? Because he gets up there and he talks like a mortician, and he says, oh, he's sorry that we have to go down this road once again. And I mean, that's not how you represent the United States. And I look forward to Marco Rubio being Secretary of State, but I really look forward to Pete Hegseth being confirmed as Secretary of Defense. And here's the thing, y'all. Before we get to the break, I'll just say this. Here's the thing. I have now watched Pete Hegseth deliver cogent replies to vilifying attacks in the public eye, speaking off the cuff, able to recall events and using no notes doing it. Delivering commentary with passion and by the way, he even said at one point his focus is going to be on the troops, and he believes it's time to have somebody come in there who still has dust on their boots, who hasn't forgotten what it's like to be in the field. And he has been. Two combat tours plus a tour in Gitmo. He has been. Do you know he actually got it? He actually retired as a major. You think that's kind of that's an in-between time. Most folks either get out as a captain or a light colonel, you know, if they're gonna stop short. He got out as a major. Why? Because as a National Guard officer, he was told that his tattoos banned him from being able to work security at the Trump inaugural in 2016. And he said, well, then I'm out of here. That's unbelievable. That's where, and he saw it, and he knew it was happening, and now he's back. How you like him now? His commentary today, I have to couple this with a couple of things before I go to the break. How about this? Trump's coming in, and all of a sudden the Army's beginning to meet its recruiting goals. Pray tell, why would this be? Well, the Biden administration's done some great things to try and help recruiting because it's hard and things. It is. The Biden administration, I will give credit on one thing. They instituted a thing called the Future Soldier Prep Course. For those who are struggling with the in-processing requirements, the physicals or the testing, they can go to, I think it's like a 6-week course, and that's great. The only problem is they didn't plan it very well, and they're using up so many of the training beds now that they don't have enough space to bring recruits into basic training because a lot of those slots are being now filled for the Future Soldier Prep courses. But the prep courses are bringing more recruits into the ability to actually enter the active ranks. So like 1/4 of the 55,000 soldiers recruited last year went through one of those prep courses. Okay, I'll give them that. But we've still been at massive lows. And you cannot tell me that the cultural aspects, the wokeness, hasn't had an impact. The Afghanistan debacle hasn't destroyed morale. You can't tell me that didn't have a play. Well, all of a sudden, story here on military.com, which is not, by the way, a conservative bastion of news. Military.com, the Army is nearly halfway to meeting its ambitious goal of recruiting 61,000 soldiers. Now, keep in mind, they're on a fiscal year. They started in October. But they're what, 4 months in? 3 months? 3.5? And they now have 30,000 new enlistments already. That's great. guess what? Everybody sees a new commander-in-chief coming. Majority of those recruits signed up after the election. How's that? Here's, you know, here's just something else to think about. There's a lot of talk right now in the news, but nothing guaranteed, that allegedly Hamas is entering into an agreement to release the hostages they've been holding for over a year. Because they wouldn't do it all this time. Guess what? Trump comes out, gets elected, and says, you release those hostages before I take office, or hell, there will be hell to pay. Guess what? All of a sudden, there's an agreement being forged.
It's funny how that works.
Mm-hmm. Leading from a position of strength with an America First doctrine. All right, when we get back from this break, I'll tell you about some things that began coming out today. And y'all, some of them are hilarious. I mean, I feel like an Adventure in Woke World segment happening here with the Pete Hegseth confirmation hearings. But there's also been some great moments where people got told what they needed to hear. You know what I'm saying? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, military-minded. Rangers lead the way. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. We have so many clips from this this Pete Hegseth hearing today. But let's talk about things that can happen. I mean, like right here in our listening area, I mentioned that this is going to have an impact on Redstone Arsenal. One of the things that could have an impact on is what happens with SpaceCom, Space Command. Guess who one of the decision makers is? The Secretary of Defense has a play in that. U.S. Space Command was supposed to have been based at Redstone Arsenal. It got pulled. And yeah, U.S. Senators Tommy Tuberville, Katie Britt, all of our delegation from Alabama. And oh, by the way, neighboring Tennessee really supports this too. I mean, my recollection is Marsha Blackburn has been very much in favor, because you know why? There's a lot of people in southern Tennessee that drive into Huntsville and Redstone Arsenal for work.
Very much so.
A lot.
Like a lot of my classmates, their parents came in from, up in, I guess it would be like Franklin, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. Well, Franklin's up closer to Nashville, but they
a lot of Huntsville's population that worked there.
Meridian and all that area, well, the bottom line is, what happens in today's hearing and the future confirmation votes on the floor of the Senate can have a major impact on this listening area, no matter whether you're in our Chattanooga affiliates, welcome Chattanooga, or, you know, in Huntsville or wherever. So Hegseth's on the Hill. Fiery hearings going on today. Let's talk about some of the things he's had to put up with. I mean, some of what he's had to put up with are people like Senator Mazie Hirono, I think she was cooked today. Something was going on. I think she had a liquid breakfast before she came in. But she really decided that it was very important that the people under, you got Mazie's? This is audio clip number two. You got that one? No, this is number three. Let's go to audio number three. Mazie Hirono, Senator Mazie Hirono, taking Pete Hegseth to task about whether he would use the military to invade Greenland. Play it.
Use our military to take over Greenland or an ally of Denmark?
Senator, one of the things that President Trump is so good at is never strategically tipping his hand. And so I would never in this public forum give one way or another the president would give me in any context.
That sounds to me that you would contemplate carrying out such an order to basically invade Greenland and take over the Panama Canal.
So I guess the Panama Canal is in Greenland now. That's what I just heard. She was stumbling her way through that. Now, have there been substantive questions? Yes, there have. Have there been people that were for him? Oh, absolutely. Our Senator Tommy Tuberville, who's been on the show many times, has been one of the leading proponents of his confirmation. But y'all,
this is just a perfect example. It drives me nuts when the left doesn't understand, like, not saying things is not an endorsement of something. Like, they're so bad at negotiating that they just air out everything to try to, you know, please the media or whatever. Like, that's why they're such bad negotiators, and that's why they can't get anything done.
And if Mazie Hirono was looking for a soundbite, she did not get it, by the way. She looked like an idiot. I mean, that was embarrassing. That's the kind of thing where her staff is in the background cringing, trying to figure out how to spin this. Because are you gonna invade Greenland? That's what I mean. Really?
I can't say. Okay, so you are. No, that's not what he said. It's so annoying.
No. And by the way, Trump's never said that either. Mm. Trump has just said he'd love to have Greenland. And oh, by the way, I'd love to have Greenland.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a strategic deterrence platform right there. That's an amazing spot. And it's underutilized and underappreciated. And meanwhile, Trump's right. China and Russia come sailing by it all the time. So maybe we ought to have some, I don't know, forward projection bases there. Awesome. and then there was a whole lot said. So Pete Hegseth, like many people, has had problems in his life. I'm not going to excuse him. I'm not going to try to minimize him. He has had some infidelity in his life. Let's put it that way. And he's been very open about it. By the way, do you have his opening statement where he gave credit to the Lord?
I could pull that very easily, yes.
Go ahead and grab that first. So I will
we
say
got
this.
About 10 seconds, by the way.
Yeah, I'll keep talking. I'll get 10 seconds till we go out. Oh, God. Okay, well, tell you what. We're going to come back from this break, and I'm going to keep playing this for you because some of these clips are so worth hearing, but not the least of which is Pete Hegseth, who, yes, knows that he's a man with fault in his past, is not so unaware of himself that he can't acknowledge it, but he also knows where his faith lies. And I'll tell you that in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking Huntsville over to Chattanooga. I'm talking Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden. I'm talking big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Let me go to the phones real quick before I jump into the Pete Hegseth stuff. Jeff Rowe from Indiana is on the line. Jeff Rowe, you're calling in early, man. What's going on?
Oh, I'm finally going back up north, and I spent 3 hours in Falkville today, so doing all right.
Well, good. You might get home at a decent hour.
Yeah, just wish I could catch back up to this 53 cream-colored Corvette with a red interior convertible just passed me.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Nice. Well, what you think about all this stuff, man? I've been talking about the Pete Hegseth hearing today. I've been talking about world position of the United States under the Biden administration. What are your thoughts?
On the Pete Hegseth thing, these senators, these Democrat senators get up there and ask him questions and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there wasn't such a thing as decorum, I would look them straight in the eye and say, Senator, I don't think you have the intelligence to ask me such a question because you couldn't even tell that your president, Joe Biden, is dementia. And everybody was sitting there telling him how wonderful he is and backing him up and how smart he was and how he gets everything done and stuff. I'm thinking, you know, your qualifications to judge me are pretty dismal at this point.
Well, I would totally agree. I tell you what, though, he didn't have to because he did have some people that were keyed up and ready to speak on his behalf on the panel. Did you hear the comments made by Senator Mark Wayne Mullen from Oklahoma?
No, I must have missed that one.
Oh, you're going to hear it here in a few minutes, brother. I mean, he came out hard and he basically said, how dare y'all say the things in his personal life? He said, you can look around the Senate and see the exact same things. And it was like
and
a total
like,
dressing down.
Oh, what was it? Connecticut Senator, the one that had the stolen valor. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. Was it Blumenthal?
Yeah, Blumenthal. Yeah, Blumenthal. Sit there and doing all this stuff and everything. I'm thinking, my gosh, is the pot calling the kettle black again?
Yes.
I can't imagine somebody like with a record like his would sit there and even stick his neck out and say a word. You know, it's like.
When he lied about service in Vietnam? He lied about service in Vietnam, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He said he was here, there, and yonder, and he found out he wasn't nowhere near there, you know, and stuff. I don't even think he had any combat experience, you know. So, he's wanted to speak about all this stuff, you know. I wish our Republicans would put him in his place. That's the problem. When somebody says something stupid like that and comes out against somebody, you know, our Republicans should have a backbone and say, you know, Senator Blumenthal, you really have a lot of room to speak there, and just put him in his place.
Well, tell you what, you're gonna hear that in a few minutes, and it's gonna be enjoyable. Just brace yourself because between Mark Wayne Mullen and Tommy Tuberville's comments, it was a hoot at times. It's also the kind of thing where you sit there just going, yeah, somebody finally said it.
Yeah, and another senator was sitting there asking questions, you know, about the, about the all the how come all these unnormed sources saying all these things about him and stuff, you know, and, you know, who are these people? Who are these people? And I would have looked at him saying, well, Senator, you're one of them, you know, right now by saying what you're saying.
All right, man. Well, let me get on it. I'll play some clips you'll enjoy. You be safe on the road, all right?
Have a good one, Phil.
We'll see you, buddy. Let's do this. Let's start with Pete Hegseth himself. Is he a perfect man? No, but he knows it. You know, he is not somebody who is so self-unaware that he can't acknowledge that he's got problems, and he's also got something that is bigger than himself that guides what he does. I'm of the personal belief that you can't say Jesus is Lord unless you actually believe it. Now, making him Lord of your everyday life is still a thing that we have to work and strive for, but we're also not a works-based salvation. And Pete Hegseth gave an unabashed credit to the Lord for why he's even able to be there today. Play that.
And as Jenny and I pray together every morning, all glory, regardless of the outcome, belongs to our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. His grace and mercy abounds each day. May his will be done.
That's a heck of a way to capstone your comments, right? He went on to say some things, though, that just fired me up. Everything I would want to hear from someone who's going to be in the position that has authority over my status as a veteran under the VA, or the memories of my father and grandfather, or my son who's on active duty now, were said today in his opening comments. Now, some of the things that were said to him, I played you Maisie Hirono a while ago. Woo! She was a loop-de-loo. And then Elizabeth Warren got busy. Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, who can represent herself as anything she wants to get whatever she wants, but God forbid somebody else would step in there who doesn't have a D by their name, and she'll have at it. So Elizabeth Warren tried to have fun with him, trying to claim that he was going to use this as a springboard to go out there and get the big jobs after he leaves the secretary's position. Come on. Here's how that went, followed by, oh, by the way, Tommy Tuberville coming in right after her. Go ahead and play it.
You're quite sure
that
every general who serves should not go directly into the defense industry for 10 years, but you're not willing to make that same pledge?
I'm not a general, Senator.
You'll be the one, let us just be clear, in charge of the generals. So you're saying sauce for the goose, but certainly not sauce for the gander.
I would want to see what the policy of the president
is. Oh, I'll bet you would.
Thank you, Senator Warren. Senator Tuberville.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your hard work and your committee's hard work. Mr. Chairman, this has gone well. I'd like to submit this letter, topic conduct at Vets for Freedom for Hegseth. I'd like to submit that for the record, please.
Without objection.
General Hegseth, Mr. Hegseth, thanks for being here today and with your family. I know this is tough. That's what it's all about, though. You're a tough guy.
That was a great moment. The levity there was one thing I did notice. Now, Hegseth, every time I watched it, he stayed calm and cool. I don't know what was going on inside his heart and mind. I mean, maybe this was a nerve-wracking day. Maybe it was something, but he looked like he was in command of his faculties all day long.
I think that alone is a good enough endorsement for him. The fact that he was able to be composed and take the pushback. I mean, it was fiery pushback too from the Democrats, like going after his personal life.
Oh yeah,
and he was able to stay composed and with it. I think that's. I think that's worthy of endorsement in itself.
And listen, I'm not saying they shouldn't ask questions about their personal lives, but the way they did it today.
There's difference in questions and attacks.
Yeah, there's questions, there's attacks. There's statements, and then there's demeaning, derogatory kind of stuff. I mean, they literally tried to tear him down. And then Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, I'm going to go with audio number two on this one. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen gave a complete dressing down to the Democrats who were there and called them out hard for it. And this is to me maybe one of my favorite moments out of all of it. Go ahead and play it.
There's a lot about qualifications, and I think it's so hypocritical of senators, especially on the other side of the aisle, be talking about his qualifications, not being able to lead the secretary or be the Secretary of Defense, and yet your qualifications aren't any better. You guys aren't any more qualified to be the senator than I'm qualified to be the senator, except we're lucky enough to be here. But let me read you what the qualifications of the Secretary of Defense is, because I Googled it, and I Googled it and went through a lot of different sites, and really it's hard to see. But in general, the U.S. Secretary of Defense position is filled by a civilian. That's it. If you have served in the U.S. Army forces and have been in the service for, you have to be retired for at least 7 years, and Congress can weigh that. And then there's questions that the senator from Massachusetts brought up about serving on a board inside the military industry, and yet your own secretary that you all voted for, Secretary Austin, we had to vote on a waiver because he stepped off the board of Raytheon.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I guess that's okay because that's a Democrat Secretary of Defense. But you so quickly forget about that. And then Senator Kaine, or I guess I better use the senator from Virginia, starts bringing up the fact that what if you showed up drunk to your job? How many senators have showed up drunk to vote at night? Have any of you guys asked them to step down and resign from their job? And don't tell me you haven't seen it, because I know you have. And then how many senators do you know have got a divorce before cheating on their wives? Did you ask them to step down? No. But it's for show. You guys make sure you make a big show and point out the hypocrisy because the man's made a mistake. And you want to sit there and say that he's not qualified? Give me a joke. I mean, it is so ridiculous that you guys hold yourself as this higher standard and you forget you got a big plank in your eye. We've all made mistakes. I've made mistakes. And Jennifer, thank you for loving him through that mistake. Because the only reason why I'm here and not in prison is because my wife loved me too. I have changed, but I'm not perfect. But I found somebody that thought I was perfect. And for whatever reason, you love Pete, and I don't know why. But just like our Lord and Savior forgave me, my wife's had to forgive me more than once, too, and I'm sure you've had to forgive him, too. And so thank you.
That's a great line, a set of lines. I mean, that's just amazing. And by the way, and I know that doesn't translate in radio, but he was not reviewing notes. He was speaking from the heart. I'm telling you, man, that's the kind of stuff that we need more of in D.C. We need to hear more commentary like that. Just saying. I mean, just wow. Now listen. And when we come back, I'm going to begin to wrap this up because I want to turn it to. Okay, so he gets confirmed. Then what? What can we expect out of a Secretary Hegseth? What can we expect to see that will do the things that we hope will happen to our U.S. military? All right, we're going to come back. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio, military minded. That's where we are today. We are back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, dropping truth bombs. That's what we're doing. So Pete Hegseth is up there today. His opening statements were amazing to me. And if you get a chance to watch them, I would encourage you to do so. Now, they were interrupted multiple times by protesters, which is just, it's crazy to me that people can come in there and scream and yell and protest, but they got hauled out. So there's that.
Can I just say how they got hauled out was funny. I saw one dude being held up by his legs and
they actually picked him up and bodily carried him out. Yeah. They'd wait. Okay, two more minutes, go. And they would.
Yeah, they all got out. They didn't spread them out. They all got out in his opening remarks. So it was poor, you know, management on their end. They all got out like right when it started.
I suspect this is not the last time we're going to see some of them coming through. But in his opening statement, though, he said he had three top missions. Hegseth. So what can we expect? What do we look for in a potential Secretary Hegseth as a SecDef? Three top missions, he said, for the Pentagon. Restore the warrior ethos. Rebuild our military, and reestablish deterrence. I loved it, man. He spoke of peace through strength. He talked about the warrior ethos. The warrior ethos for the U.S. Army, by the way, is I will always place the mission first. I will never accept defeat. I will never quit. I will never leave a fallen comrade. I think the rank and file gets that, but the rank and file is not being led that by the upper brass. I mean, there's been a moving away from so much of what makes us strong, fit, lean, and mean, able to go and do hard things in hard places. So restoring those things, how's he going to do this? Some of the ways he says he's going to do it, besides restoring the warrior ethos to the Pentagon itself, not just making it a bureaucracy, but making it a warfighting command element. He also says he's going to provide new defense companies with better shots at winning contracts. So what does that mean? Well, there's this sense right now that if you're not part of the good old boy super system of defense contractors, that you can't break in. You'll never get a contract. You'll You're destined to have to be the sub, if anything, for, you know, decades. He's going to make sure that the smaller companies get a chance to do things that they're good at. He's going to, which, by the way, creates innovation. He also says he's going to be pushing for the rapid deployment of emerging technologies. In other words, not waiting on something to be developed over a legacy of research for like 50 years. And then he said this about himself. He said, I don't have a similar biography to defense secretaries of the last 30 years. By the way, he's got a good biography. He said, I don't have a similar biography to defense secretaries for the last 30 years, but as President Trump told me, we've repeatedly placed people atop the Pentagon with supposedly the right credentials. Retired generals, academics, defense contractor executives, and where has it gotten us? He said, it's time to give someone with dust on their boots a chance at the helm, a change agent, he said. He said, we are American warriors. Our standards will be high and they will be equal, not equitable. I love that line. He said, we're going to make sure every warrior is fully qualified on their assigned weapon. Every pilot's fully qualified on the aircraft they're flying. Every general or flag officer selected for leadership is based purely on performance and readiness and merit. No more glass ceilings. I'm for that, man. I'm so sick of seeing glass ceilings broken once again by flag officers. We don't care. Is my son, my grandson, anybody in my sphere going to be led by people that I trust to do the job? Listen, this all happened today, and this is all, I mean, it's coming down the pike, and we're going to see more. And, you know, and right out the bat, we got Lloyd Austin, who is trying to defend things and saying the military's not woke. That's not what's happening. Okay, I got news. It really is. Why do you think today hundreds of Navy SEALs and other veterans marched in D.C. to support Hegseth's confirmation as defense secretary? And why is it that Politico, Phil, did you go to Politico? I did. Why do you think Politico ran an article just exactly, almost exactly 30 days ago, saying that military leaders are now rattled because a list of so-called woke senior officers has been talked about as being those that will be dismissed by Pete Hegseth for promoting diversity and equity and inclusion in the ranks if he's confirmed to the Pentagon? I got news, man. This is exactly why we voted for Trump. And I'll be the first to admit, when I heard Hegseth's name, I was like, the TV guy? I knew he was in the Army, but really? So I did my own digging, and I encourage you to do the same. Degrees from Princeton and I think Harvard, if I'm not mistaken. I got to go back and look. You know, time spent in combat as a troop leader, an infantry officer. He had any number of leadership evaluation reports or officer evaluation reports that came out glowing. He also went on to be a career guy at the helm of Concerned Veterans of America, which is a national level organization. And then he's been on the world stage with his position at Fox. I heard him speak personally and got a chance to shake his hand in a receiving line when he was here in Alabama a few years ago. And the guy just comes across as fairly genuine. But the reality is, he's on the record. He's an open book. He's written a book. You can go read it. And so if you wonder where he stands on the issues, well, he's out there. He's not going to be the guy that comes in who's been working quietly in the defense industry or, you know, retired 3 years ago after being in the command and no one knows where he stands on the policies. This dude is a solid Republican. He's a unabashed born-again Christian who says, God has changed my life. And he's somebody who loves this country and says he is absolutely going to be a change agent in the Pentagon. And I got news. We need some agents of change in the Pentagon. All right, that's that. I'll take text messages when we get back from this break. Y'all, I'm telling you, you guys have been some texting machines, and I got to catch up. The number's 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. Yeah. How do you feel about it? Military-minded, are we heading in a good direction with this? Or are you worried about it? I'd love to know. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.